This is a Pinball News production.
Welcome. Like, thank you all for coming, and especially thank Mike and Rob for the 29th anniversary of the greatest pinball show on earth, Pinball Expo. We should introduce everybody for when you have questions and anything exciting you want to ask these gentlemen. We have Eric Meunier, one of the best electrical engineers on the planet.
Nobody can see you. We're sitting
there. Everybody say hi, Eric. Hi, Eric. Keith Johnson, very gifted and talented programmer, a long time in the industry, some of the greatest games to his credit. Joe Balser, designer extraordinaire. Matt Reister. This guy was way of when you're looking at all the exotic toys, pinball mirrors, all the decorations, Matt was 5 years ahead of everybody. Butch Peel. He's our service manager.
Yeah, it was good too.
JP DeWin. Okay. When you're watching The Wizard of Oz animation, the back screen, everything, that's his work. And, of course, the man of the hour, Jack Guarnieri.
That's everybody's.
Jack, do you want to say a few words?
Yeah, sure. I'm never without a few words. I just want to, I made myself a few notes so I don't talk too long. So I'd like to thank the Academy. No, that's the wrong thing. Actually, I truly appreciate the support and encouragement of everybody here. You know, tonight it's titled The Unexpected Journey, which is a Hobbit-related kind of reference. But this has been an unexpected journey. You know, it took us a lot longer to get here. It cost us a lot more money to do it. And it's been a real struggle. You know, there have been some really great days, and there have been some really bad days. We had mistakes that had mistakes. So it was, you know, I was 28 pounds heavier when we started this project. All right. I wasn't really ever heavy. Ladies or gentlemen, whoever wants to go on a diet, just start a pinball company. Okay. You know, and I don't even take a salary from the company, so maybe that's the other reason I'm not eating. Not really. But look, you know, I bumped into a lot of people that got their games. Who got their games already? Holy crap, that's good. Who didn't get a game yet? Okay. Yeah, I know. You got games, wise guy. But yeah, you just didn't get them all. Well, you'll get them all. Last week they boxed about 56 games, which is pretty good considering the beginning of May they were barely putting four games in a box in a week. Basically, now as of the other day, we ship more than 500 games. So I think that's. It's a real number. It's a real number, and I think the majority of them, I think there were 433 of them, or Emerald City, Wizard of Oz games. And, you know, we're doing our best. The people that call looking, you know, when are they going to get the games, you know, you're going to get them. We're just doing it. 3 years ago, I was at this show in 2010, and I was thinking about starting a pinball company. Just a crazy, nutty idea, you know, starting a pinball company. You got to be nuts. I was Stern's biggest distributor. I know what it took to make a pinball machine. Some of these guys worked at Stern, at Williams, you know, Gottlieb, other companies, you know, and it's an impossible thing to do. We couldn't do it without you guys because you guys put the money into the company and the faith in all of us to make the game. I guess really in the beginning, we could have failed 2 years ago. You know, we could have not built a game. Everybody loses your money. What are you going to do? You know, this schmuck started a company and did his best, and he went out of business. We didn't do that. We built a game. And we're going to build more games. You know, The Hobbit, we're going to talk about that a little bit tonight. And, you know, it's a really wonderful thing. It really is to see people give me pictures of them opening games and their kids at unboxing parties and people having a really great time all over the world. It's very satisfying for everybody because I didn't do it. You know, I'm probably the last person that did it. You know, you guys did it, and they did it. You know, I was just the facilitator in the middle of it. You know, I just cheerleader. You know, a lot of the control of what the company did, I didn't have control of it. It took on a life of its own. You know, you have vendors that make something a certain way, and they make it this way instead of that way, and something takes forever to get. Not you. Your stuff was good. You know, it takes forever to get, and you know, look, it's life. You know, you go through it, and you learn more, and, you know, we think the next one will be easier, and the next one will be easier, and you go on from there, and put one foot in front of another, and you get through another day. Let me just see if I forgot anything I really wanted to say. I did want to thank Lloyd, first and foremost, too, not just for the introduction, but Lloyd's been a great friend for many years. He's the first guy on the front line when you call extension 222 and you get him to help you with service. And then, you know, Eric and Butch. Butch will tell you a little bit about what he's been doing with update for the manual and everything like that. And all our people back in New Jersey where, you know, they're working really hard building games. About 60 people in the building now. We have visitors this week, right, Jerry? You guys were there. You know, the door's open if anybody's in Jersey and they want to come by. Between the hurricanes and the fires and the locusts and the frogs and everything else, Jesse, you're not welcome anymore. Jesse came last year, and 2 days later we had Hurricane Sandy. And this year he came and the Seaside Boardwalk burnt down. Same day, right? We couldn't even go to Manhattan. It was a big rainstorm, like the world was coming to an end, and, you know, so you're welcome, but you better make advance notice. Let Governor Christie know when you're coming to the state. I think that's it for me. I'll probably talk again in a little bit, and we'll go through Lloyd. I guess what we'll do, Lloyd has some questions that he's going to ask as the moderator. Then we'll have some questions from the audience, and then we'll have a little update about a whole bunch of things, what we're doing. All right, so thank you.
Okay, everybody's pretty much gotten a chance to play the Wizard of Oz on the vendor plate on the vendor hall.
I'm sorry.
That wasn't in our contract.
I'm sorry. Is everybody? A lot of people here. Have you had a chance to play the Wizard of Oz on the vendor hall floor? Okay, the first one. You know, we're probably going to start with Keith Johnson because those have the 1.22 update. And Keith, would you care to tell us more about when we might expect that, what's in it, things like that, please?
All right. The latest update have the last remaining two Munchkin modes, the last three Crystal Ball modes. We have some Glinda stuff in there now. A lot of teeny little bugs fixed up, a lot more, you know, added graphics and sound effects and that kind of thing. We spent the last couple of days testing it quite a bit and getting a little bit more stuff in there. So we'll test this version over Expo and probably release it, you know, early next week, I'd say. So that's where we're at right now.
Eeny, meeny, miny, moe. Joe Balser. People are going to be asking a lot of questions, but I got to ask, what's it like designing The Hobbit? Where are we? When are we going to see something?
I'm going to sit back down. I can't answer that. No. These were not rehearsed questions, so I just got sideswiped here. The Hobbit is coming along. We had another meeting this afternoon, brought everybody in to see what direction we were going to take certain shots, what everything, all the hidden shots or hidden combos and everything that's in the game. We have to keep a tighter cap on this game. The licensor, Warner Brothers, has kind of, they're holding back a lot of information until the movies come out. They're very careful about any of the graphics or IP or anything from the movie, any imagery. It's very limited as far as the look of the game, what we want the game to turn out to be. There's not a lot of graphics that our artists and our graphic artists can work with right now, but it will come. It doesn't mean that the game doesn't progress. So, you know, we've got a lot of parts ordered for the Whitewood. We've got partial Whitewood built up, and we're just going from there. I think we've gone through the shots. I know it's going to be a shooter's game. It's got a lot of shots to it that turn out to be real nice combos. So, you know, having said that, we're given a little bit more control to the player, where there's going to be a little more interaction, not just flipping at flippers. So there's going to be more interaction with the player in the game. That's something that, you know, we could definitely step up in pinball, because mostly it's flipping it. You know, you're flipping away, and that's pretty much it. Obviously, that's the whole game and how you beat it and how you get better. But we're adding some other things to the game that I think will attract players and, you know, of all levels that will like to see some new things going on too. So it's coming there. You guys ain't going to be seeing a lot like we were able to put out there for Wizard of Oz, and it's just a different way they're handling this. We thought about years ago when we go in for licenses, you would bring back a lot with you. Well, now with the internet and the way, if I put one image on the screen, you know, on a Facebook page, it spreads like wildfire, and that's exactly what the licensors are wanting to keep a cap on. So, but it's coming. I think you'll like it. Thanks.
I forgot to ask Matt next. Any tidbits? What exciting toys are you designing for The Hobbit?
Smog.
We'll get back to you.
Yeah, I don't know. No, there's a lot of them. Woz had a lot of toys, wasn't really overpopulated or overcrowded. Hobbit, it's going to be a full game. There's... Yeah, I was going to say, around 10, maybe more, you know, potential of ideas of what we might put in, might not, you know, but like Joe said, a lot's new, and we're kind of waiting on some things to decide. So it's getting there.
How big is Smog going to be?
Fairly decent size. Going to try to keep a lot of detail in them. All the toys, actually, especially for this game, going to make sure it has lots of detail in it and really holds true to what you see on the screen. So,
I know you can't tell everything, Matt, but do appreciate that, you know, we're looking at...
Put a hot light on it, maybe you'll get more...
Yeah.
But, you know, do appreciate the amount that we're looking at for new and exciting things. Who do I want to ask next? I want to ask Butch, because I know what Butch Beal. I know at one point there was talk of service schools, all kinds of great things going on. You're a service manager. What's it like? What's going on, and what's going to be coming?
Well, we unloaded all that up on Lloyd, so. No. We still have plans for that sort of thing. I know that's something that Jack was real excited about early on and kind of brought me on board for to begin with, was go around when we do these shows and maybe instead of getting up here and talking about the next project, we take an hour or two to bring a game up and kind of go through some of the what makes it tick, go look under the hood a little bit, some of the troubleshooting tips, things like that. Geared more towards our operators or any of the home folks that want to come and learn about it. But I know that's still on the planning block, but, you know, we haven't got there yet to actually start scheduling the things. But I know it's something we still want to do. Right, Jack?
Yep.
Yeah.
How about your manual? What's up with your manual?
Manual? Oh, we're going to back up, talk about Wizard of Oz now, I guess. Yeah. I started the manual about a year ago.
I had a couple of year, I was behind these guys a couple of years getting started with it. So that's the excuse I like to use anyway for it taking so long to get finished. But we're putting out the version 2.2 of the manual I just gave to Jim Thornton yesterday. He's nitpicking it and red inking it, just a little aesthetic thing mostly, and double checking part numbers and all that. There's a tremendous amount of part numbers and things that go into the manual, but we're up to 220 pages in that manual now, so probably going to end up, by the time we do all the new boards and everything else, going to be over 300 pages, I would bet. So it's the unabridged version. We basically made a hard copy yesterday. It turned a bind of paper into a manual. It's pretty cool. Yeah, you were the one that brought me into this. You knew what I was going to do. But, you know, a lot of the new stuff that's in the manual that's not on what's on our website right now, I've got a lot of the schematics, wiring diagrams, things like that, went more into detail of the PCBs and how they're interconnected, wiring, things like that. It's a lot of, like, 60 pages worth of new information on wiring and schematics and part lists and things like that for the I.O. board, the sound board, the volume control board, and the coin door, things like that. I wouldn't know anything about that.
What was your question?
Inside joke.
Oh. Yeah. No, because I'll probably repeat the questions, so if they're recording them, so they will be picked up.
He was asking about the 75th anniversary topper and things like that. Yeah. When you take into account that the game has a standard edition, a limited edition, and then this ruby red edition that they showed in California, you know, there's a lot of different part numbers, a lot of parts have different part numbers that, you know, that's the same part, but it's three different colors, or it's, you know, it's a little bit different for each of the versions of the game, and that's got to be in every manual, so it just kind of triples the work here and there. No big deal. We'll get through it.
I got to ask, Eric, you're one of the sharpest electrical engineers in pinball today.
Oh, don't encourage him.
He's one of the biggest eaters, too.
Yeah.
He's one of the biggest eaters, too. But, what's it like being part of the team? What's it like designing boards, designing the electrical ends of things?
So I grew up in the pinball industry. My dad is Norb from Kingpin Games. So I grew up on the route. I know what it's like to have to fix games, have to work on games. So when I graduated UW with my electrical engineering degree and Jack hired me, I wanted to make games easy to work on. I was tossed into this project a little late, so everything's not my design right now, but I'm sure some of you guys know some of the boards have been redesigned, trying to make them more robust, a little easier to work on. And I'm trying to bring modern technology to pinball, which has been the same technology for 30 years. You know, switch matrices and shift registers and electronic things like that. So it's pretty cool making new stuff, making new RGB LED boards and color changing things and having monitors and screens everywhere. And it's lots of fun.
Thank you. Well, we only got one person left before we get to the audience's questions, unless nobody has any. JP DeWin, I was watching on your laptop today how you're assembling animations and everything. A lot of what you see in Wizard of Oz on the LCD screen is this gentleman's work. Is it easy? Is it hard? How did you do it? Because some of the work you did was just simply amazing.
Well, I've had a lot of experience in television broadcast animation for over 10 years. So, and this was the first pinball game, of course, to design for me. Easy, yeah. It's my work. I love my work, so it doesn't feel hard to do. So I really enjoy creating the animations. And I guess for other people it would be hard to do, but yeah, had a lot of fun. Still having a lot of fun. Yeah.
Have you anything else to add?
Well, blackout.
That's okay. I'm sorry.
No, just ask questions.
But did you folks hear one thing that J.P. Duwin said, he loves what he does. It's one thing that Jack's assembled with his team. Everybody up here loves what they do. Hey, Jack, we still got magnets?
What?
JJP magnets?
Yeah.
Ooh! Should we get to questions and answers or the trivia contest?
I want to talk about The Hobbit.
Oh, wait a second. Jack would like to speak about The Hobbit.
You know, Jeff Bush isn't here, and Jeff Bush is doing the artwork for The Hobbit, right? I don't see Jeff. He's a big guy, and he's not here. He couldn't make it tonight. So I know, I just wanted to tell you what's going on with that, because Joe started talking about assets that we get and assets that we don't. So, you know, this is a challenge for us because the movie was really two movies and then they made it into three, right? Which is a great thing to make money with. So in a couple of months, the second movie opens and we already have the assets to the first and second movie. Is that right, JP?
Yes.
even I got to beat it out of him, but I happen to know we have the assets to the first and second movie. So they're already working on that stuff, and they can't release that. Actually, when they download information from the site, there's watermarks all over it, and you have to have certain access, and it's a crazy thing because, you know, billions of dollars, I guess, are involved, and, you know, pinball is like, what is that compared to, you know, the whole movie? So you don't want to be giving what something looks like to somebody like us who's going to let it go. Not that we're going to let it go. Our fiduciary duty to them is to protect it. So that's what we have to do. So right now, JP's working on some things having to do with that. And Jeff Bush, you know, the artwork that you saw in the cabinet is not the artwork that you're going to get on your game. You know, that was artwork that Jeff, you know, mocked up because we wanted to make the game look like something. He only could show what was on the first movie, right? So probably by the end of the year, I would expect that you'll see, uh-oh, here's trouble. Hey, Mike, how are you? Thanks for letting us be here. Everybody, Mike Pasak. Without him, there is no show. He told me I had to do that. So, no, he didn't. No, he didn't. So, you know, what I would expect to see on the game is artwork from the first and second movie. Maybe you're going to have some areas of the cabinet that are blocked out for a character that might be introduced in the third movie, so you wouldn't be able to see that till later on. I do fully expect that a year from now, we're building Hobbit games along with Wizard of Oz games. That's, you know, my next dream. I have to go wacky people like me navigate dream to dream. So my dream is that, you know, we get a little bit ahead, if it's possible, on The Hobbit. Because, again, contractually, we need to have that game out when the third movie's out. We really can't, you know, Wizard of Oz, we slid our way into the 75th anniversary of the movie. You know, if it might have been the 100th anniversary of the movie if we didn't really step on it. I don't know. Some days, some of us thought we'd never get there. So The Hobbit, you'll probably see captured artwork in the cabinet and the playfield, mostly first and second movie. I would venture to say you'll see a lot more of the third movie in the animation asset, right? Because the cool thing that you guys are seeing is that now, even with Wizard of Oz, those that played it a year ago when it was a box of lights at the show and then played it at different shows and you saw it develop and evolve, there's more and more cool stuff in there. When Keith does an update with Ted, and Ted Estes is not here tonight either, but when Keith and Ted get together and they do an update, sometimes they update the games in my building, and I walk down the assembly line, and I stop because all of a sudden I see an animation that I haven't seen in about a year and a half since it was approved with Warner Brothers. And actually, you guys just added a couple of animations to the game, too, that weren't even there. When we went to the 75th anniversary, the screening of the movie last month, at the Chinese Theater, which was cool. Joe was there, and Drew was there, and Jen and Jack, everybody was there. You know, we got to go to the Chinese Theater, the famous Grauman's, which is now the TCL Chinese Theater, and we were there with a whole bunch of celebrities, and Joe was, you know, leering all over a couple of them, and so were a couple other people, you know, and we had a lot of fun. And it was really the first time we got to see The Wizard of Oz on a screen. You know, we sat there with 3D glasses, and we realized, we've never seen The Wizard of Oz before on screen. Who actually went to see The Wizard of Oz in 3D? Anybody? C- because, okay, cool, right? And it was a different experience, and you could get the DVDs and all that. But it showed me, I was sitting next to Joe, and as the lion was running down the hallway and he was leaped out the window and the wizard scared him, I said to Joe, wouldn't that be a cool animation when you lost your ball, right? Well, it's in the game. It's in the game. That it happened just like that. You know, we told JP and Keith, and in the next update, it's in there. And then when we saw, I don't know his name, I've only seen the movie 500 times, the guy that takes care of the door and he doesn't let you in, and Dorothy is crying, and he starts crying, and all the tears are coming out of his eyes, that guy. Well, I said, gee, that would be another one of those good videos, like when you lost your ball. And that's in the game. So the crazy thing about all of this, you know, we're still adding more stuff to this game. Okay? We're still adding. We have stuff in the bag that isn't in the game yet, that Keith is still adding to the game with all these other modes that are coming in and everything like that. You go play that game. I would bet a year from now when we're building The Hobbit and I'm back up here, I'm telling you, hey, we just added this to The Wizard of Oz, or we just added that to The Wizard of Oz. It's that kind of game, and what enables us to do that is the LCD. Okay? That LCD makes the game be alive. You know, we can't change a static image on a screen. We can't change the artwork on the cabinet. We can't change the artwork on the playfield. But the rules that they've developed, and, you know, Keith is a big Hobbit, Lord of the Ring guy. Eric knows every battle weapon known to, you know, anybody in these things. And, you know, all these guys are really into it. JP, you know, when you go pick something, you've heard it before, when you go pick something to do, you can't give crazy ingredients to the chef, except if you're on a TV show, and expect them to make something out of it. They have to want to do it. So, you know, you could shove it down their throat and say, you're going to design the game, and it's too bad, and you're going to work with this. But it's a lot better if they really love what they're doing. So, Lloyd, you know, you're right. We are very fortunate. They do love what they're doing, and it shows in the game. You know, everybody thought we were building a game for all the home customers. You know, like I have two sides of my life, collector, player, and technician and operator. But the game goes to locations, and the game makes money every week. But the difference with our game is that the first week it does this money, and the second week it does this, and the third it does this, and the fourth it does this, because people are getting deeper into it. And what it captured is what we wanted it to capture. We wanted it to capture young people that never played a pinball machine before. Women. Okay, I've said it before. The smarter sex. Women. Okay, that see the game and they want to play the game because they associate with that game. And everybody had a Wizard of Oz kind of thing. Well, we're going to bring that with The Hobbit too. So The Hobbit is going to be a great storytelling game, but laid out a little differently. It's not going to be the same kind of layout. You've seen the layout and what it's going to be. So it's going to be pretty cool. The other thing I just wanted to mention before we go further, dynamics. So Eric's here. I want to just let you turn over the microphone. You know, we did a thing with dynamics because a lot of our games have swipe card on it where you have a reward credit card. Okay, so we're going to announce tonight a little bit more of a partnership with Dynamics and what they're doing with their reward cards. And they have, you know, everybody uses a credit card, but you could have this real cool card that you can pick your rewards and you achieve different things. And we're going to do a little press release about how that relates to Wizard of Oz and Hobbit and Jersey Jack games. And if you spend X amount of money, what you get off on your games and things like that. So you want to say something, Eric? Okay, yeah.
Yeah, Dynamics. We offer a unique rewards card, which is a Visa card, and we're really honored to be have a partner like Jersey Jack, because it's a very unique reward. This is the version of the card that has been issued now. You basically can assign reward, whatever reward you want. There's over 50 rewards in our system, Jersey Jack being one of them, and you can assign that to the card, press the button, and you'll get that reward, or you can change it to button number 2. So you can change what reward you get at any point, and you can change those rewards on your phone. But more important is the partnership that we have here. It's I think the first reward in the pinball industry that you can earn by just spending your money however you normally spend and selecting the Jersey Jack reward. And you can earn, first for every time you use the card and every $10, you earn a chance to win the Wizard of Oz machine. That happens automatically. But after $2,500 on the card that you just spend, you'll earn $100 off the purchase of a Jersey Jack machine. And then you can do that up to $300, or you can earn that towards the Hobbit. And I guess you want to announce the new aspects, right? Yes. You want me to tell them or no? No, you know, you can describe it better than I can. So anyway, there'll be a unique thing that we're introducing tonight, which is another thing that you can earn if you've already got the game. So there's going to be some exciting news in terms of, you know, along the lines of what Jack was just describing in terms of the additive nature of the game as you go on. So if you've already got a WOZ machine, you should get this card because you're going to be able to do some things that nobody else can do and earn some things that nobody else can earn. But in addition, you know, this is a we are coming out. I can show it to you if you come up to the desk. We have just developed an exclusive pinball design for the card. So it's another way that you can kind of show your love of the game. And it's only available on an e-plate. So we're asking you guys to sign up. If you sign up here, you're eligible to win a signed Translite that we will draw the winner on Monday, and that will be shipped to you. So we're here, right here, and we're also next to the Wizard of Oz machines inside. But this is a really interesting thing for you to pay attention to.
Who are your other partners that you have?
Oh, yeah. We have some very unique partners. Our CEO is a big pinball fan, Jeff Mullen, and he sort of designed some of the rewards to appeal to some of the things he was interested in. One of them is Dark Horse Comics. They have an exclusive series of comics that you can only get on an e-plate. Or Upper Deck Trading Cards and Panini are both reward partners if you're a collector. Upper Deck has issued an infinite series of football, basketball, and golf, an exclusive series of cards. I've been at a number of card shows over the past couple of weeks, and they're drawing a lot of attention. That's the only way you can get these cards. But then we also have seven major airlines. You earn 1.35 air dollars for every dollar you spend. Or you can earn cash back at 1.25% with no games or gimmicks. It's 1.25%. You don't have to go to Lowe's 1 week and Kohl's the next week and gas the next week to get the discounts. So there's that. There's Longaberger Baskets. There's 1-800-Flowers. And the rewards we offer are much more aggressive than a typical 1% card. Our typical reward is 3 to 4%. So that's 3 or 4 times what you can get. You can also earn an iPad. I'll give you an example. You can earn an iPad mini after $20,000. If you had an Amex card, it's $58,000. That's just an example of how much more aggressive the rewards are on this card. So I encourage all of you to come by. We can explain it further, but we have some exciting news coming up.
Thank you. Yeah, Jeff is a big time. Jeff's not going to be here, though, right? Jeff created this company. And the crazy thing about it is that the credit card has like a circuit board in there, and it's got these LEDs. And when I used the card, I used it today when I bought everybody lunch. It's my personal card, and I gave it to the girl, and she's looking at the card like, what the hell is going on with this card? So, you know, the other part of our games are that we have a coin door that's unique to Jersey Jack Pinball, that the coin door has a big enough slot on it that it could take a bill acceptor and the industry credit card reader, right? Because if the game can't take money, it can't make money. So some of our games that are out there, you know, they encourage the use of not just a debit card like at an amusement center, like an embed card or something like that. It encourages use of using a credit card to swipe on the game. And, you know, the credit card readers are coming down in price. You know, they were $400, and we partnered with a couple of different companies where we buy them from, and they're less. And we found that operators that put bill acceptors on the game, first of all, make money. So, you know, we have included a bill acceptor for free to operators for their first game. And that's been a little painful, but it's been good because they see what the difference is that our games make. And the second thing is they put the credit card reader on, and they see, you know, because a lot of younger people don't carry any money at all, everything's plastic. So the card is kind of great. Jeff started that company. They raised, you know, millions of dollars from Bain Capital and everything like that, and they got a really, really nice company. So we're happy they're here, too. So. It's got all pinballs on it.
But it's got a lot of pinballs on it. The first credit card you've ever seen with pinballs on it. I think that's pretty cool.
I'll have to get that one.
Yeah, we'll get, it says Jersey Jack up here, so another way to reinforce the brand.
Well, we've pretty well met the team. We've heard about the cards. And I'm sure you're all dying for questions. Now, I will repeat the questions. And if you want to direct them at somebody, please do so. So anybody have a question? Dave Marston.
Follow up on that credit card. Does that require some kind of a network connection or wire connection to validate the card? The credit card is quite big.
Oh, on the pinball machine? Yes. Well, the credit card reader itself on the game is its own unit. It transmits its own unit. Doesn't have to be, yeah. It doesn't have to be. It's a secure. It's a not telegraph. It's what? Yeah, it's not Wi-Fi either. It's a secure network. But it doesn't require wireless. It just communicates with cellular technology, so it's self-contained. USA Technologies has them. Mars has them. There's three or four different companies that have them. They're out there.
Even if it's cellular and I'm running this on location, I don't have to negotiate anything.
No, they have them all. It's you buy the unit, you sign up for the service. There is a fee. For it, you know, we have nothing to do with it, unfortunately, but, you know, we don't get any money from that. But, you know, you don't see them a lot on amusement games because there is a fee, right? So if you're selling a can of soda for $3.50 and they're charging you a quarter for the transaction, it's a lot. But you can negotiate with them. They have, you're seeing them on more and more amusement games now. You know, if you have a game that's a dollar play or you do a game where it's a dollar play, and a $5 swipe for six plays, it's worth it because the incremental income you make because you have the card reader, it pays for the card reader and it pays for the service charge. It's not that terrible. You know, if the choice was people don't play the game at all or you pay a little service charge and they do play the game, I guess, you know, you take one loaf of bread instead of nothing. But, yeah. USA Technologies is one and Mars, MEI, is the other one. There's a couple more that work with our games, too.
Any other questions? Red shirt, I think, was first. Yes, sir. Why to make... are you directing this to any one person? Oh, Keith will answer this. Why is Wizard of Oz a low-scoring game?
All right. Is that better? All right. The thought, basically, is that no one understands higher scores. I should say, you know, casual players don't understand higher scores. You know, you can say you got 10 billion, 300 million on a game, but no, who knows what those numbers are? I mean, people, you know, can't understand what $17 billion in debt is, you know? I mean, it's like an unbelievable number, and no one has any concept, you know? Oh, did I say billion? Yeah, I meant trillion. See, even I can't say it right. My father is one of the smartest people I know, and he played my World Poker Tour, you know, a few months ago, and, you know, said, oh, I did pretty good. I got 300,000 on the game, you know. Well, he didn't get 300,000. He got 300 million or whatever. So, you know, I mean, there's not any reason for it. I mean, why not have a game where you can understand the scores? Who cares? I don't understand why someone would care that a good game was 10,000 versus a good game was 10 billion. We all play EMs too, I assume. You know, we don't just play DMD games. You know, there's a lot of games that barely score four digits. It just ultimately it doesn't matter. So why not keep things a little bit more understandable and, you know, have something like a million is a really awesome game instead of, you know, 550 million is a really awesome game. That's what it was born out of.
But 11 is better than 10.
Exactly. Now that's a lot more understandable probably than 575 million versus 428 million.
There was actually another thought that I had with that too, and Keith, we all were agreed about that because the scores were out of control. You know, we thought, you know, you shoot a ball and you got a reward. You got like a million points for just shooting a ball. It's like that Meet the Fockers when the kid got the trophy for ninth place. You know, we don't really have to reward everybody, right, do we? So, you know, you're going to lose. That's what life's about sometimes. You don't get a great score. But what we did on the game were a couple other things. We remember, it's a 1939 movie. We took everything down. You know, so we deflated the score along with going back to 1939. That was another thought. And then the other thing on the game that they did was when you lose your ball on both sides, you have a game. You already lost your ball, right? You got a game to play on both sides of the game when you lose your ball to get back in the game physically on the left side and through your skill on both sides. So we wanted to give you a little bit more than just, you know, shooting the ball and plan for the score. The score is great, and that's what we keep track of, obviously. But what you achieved in the game and how you got through it and the modes and the challenge was something that we wanted to highlight rather than just getting a huge, gigantic score.
Just like Jim? Yeah, if it, you,
talk about the Three Stooges?
Directed anybody, Jim?
Jack and Marv are in reference to Ruby Red Redemption. Was that a one-time thing for Hollywood, or is there a feature for Ruby Red Redemption?
That's a good question. You know, we built two games for Warner Brothers because they asked us to go there with the two games, and they came out beautiful. And one game went to the president of the Warner Brothers in California. It's getting delivered tomorrow, the next day. Pat Choi is doing that for us, one of our distributors in California. The other one went to an office in Manhattan. So, you know, a lot of people asked about the game. It wasn't, you know, a plan to do it, not do it. We made a special glass, red. We made a different topper. We made all the body armor in red. Matt made some toys. It's got some different screens in it. It's got a different, you know, whole logo that JP did for the 75th anniversary. It actually even plays the trailer from the 3D version of the movie. You know, at this moment, I don't have a plan to do the game, but if we do the game, I wouldn't be surprised that we did the game. And that's a mouthful, because the last thing I want to announce is that we're doing the game and you didn't get your Emerald City limited edition game. You know, so what am I supposed to do then? You know, if we don't do the game, and there's an opportunity to do it because people want it, because next year's the 75th anniversary, then you didn't give your customers what they wanted, right? That's bad. If you do the game, well, then you got all these people that bought Emerald City, and maybe I didn't want to buy Emerald City. Maybe I wanted the other edition game, you know, so we didn't really make a decision on that. You know, I guess I could try to figure out the difference of what it cost, and it's, you know, not less. I don't want to sound like everybody else, but it's not less to do that game, because when we get into next year, our whole agreement with Warner Brothers changes in 2014, and there's different royalties kick in and things like that. So if I do that as another edition, that game's not going to be, you know, $6,500 the day that we did Emerald City prices. I mean, we see our games already selling for $10,000. I see somebody's got a game on eBay. It didn't sell for $12,000. Somebody bet me it will sell for $12,000 before Christmas. I don't know. I don't set the value of the game. But going back to the 75th anniversary edition, you know, I don't know. I got enough to do right now without going and doing that game. But, you know, it's a difficult thing to think about, because I used to hate when I bought something, whatever I bought. You know, you bought an iPhone and you got the latest iPhone, and 15 minutes later I could take this and throw it against the wall. But that's not the case with the Emerald City games or the regular games. So, you know, there were only 1,000 Emerald Cities, and then the regular games, we're going to try to build as many of them as we can. And if we do a 75th anniversary game, you know, I don't know. I haven't polled customers. I haven't talked about it publicly. I'm kind of like between it. You know, I don't want to really announce another game before you shipped the rest of those games. So I don't know. I'd rather not, you know, do that. Unless somebody here wants to start ordering 75th anniversary games, and then we'll think about it. But I don't know. It's a crazy thing to think about. But it kind of was by accident that they wanted it. We did create it. We knew everybody would see it. You know, we'll go from there.
Yes, sir.
I guess that wasn't an answer, really. I'm sorry. Next, I'm running for politics, political office.
Yes, sir.
This question is probably for Jack. I'm not sure if it's true, but it seems clear to me that a fair percentage of your market is us, primarily collectors and home users, as opposed to traditional operators. Is that what you expected, and have you done anything differently in terms of design or build specifically for the home market?
So as I was talking about before, and I've talked about it at other shows, because I love pinball and I love to play pinball and I'm a collector, and then that other side of my life is a technician and an operator, revenue shares games. In the beginning, I knew most of the games we were going to sell were going to go to you, thank God, you know, because pinballsales.com, that company sells everything nobody needs. It's a trademark saying of the company since 1999. Did you really need a $6,000, $7,000, $8,000, $9,000 pinball machine? No. Nobody needs that. You wanted it. Great. You wanted it. We built it for you. Thank God we built the game. That was a big thing that I wanted to live to see. And I used to joke with them a year ago, you know, if I drop dead, just make sure you finish the game, okay? Otherwise, I'm going to come back and pinch your toes, all right, and you sleep. All right, they did that. What's happening now is that we're filling primarily most of our orders for the Emerald City Limited Edition because you're waiting a year or 2 years or 23 months. Somebody just had a big YouTube video the other day. The guy was jumping up and down, waiting 23 months, and I was waiting with bated breath to make sure the game actually worked out of the box, which it did, thank God, you know. I said, oh, my God, this guy made this crazy video, you know. Now what's happened is that some of the regular games and some of the Emerald City games, they've gone on location. And unbelievably, you know, they make money and people want more of them. So operators want more. Right now, the operators that I know want, I could sell 200 of these games tomorrow afternoon if I had them. The biggest problem I have is that I don't have them. All right, we're building them as fast as we can build them. It doesn't mean that the other products in the market are not good. It just means our product is different and it's got a demand. So I fully would hope that we would sell X thousands of those games for location. Because as an operator, to me, it never mattered what the game cost. And I've talked about this before. It always mattered what the game made, right? So if I bought a game for $5,000, I bought a new pinball machine for $5,000, and the thing made $120 the first week and $130 the second week and $110 the next week, and it went and had that bell curve like a lot of different games do. Driving games now are out of favor, and a lot of video games are out of favor. You don't see video games anymore in bars, you know, countertop games, because everybody's on Facebook or they're playing Blocky or something like that on their phone. So, you know, it's changed over these years. So pinball, people are going back to it in a way because it's mechanical, because everyone plays differently, because it's a skill game, right? It's not like a crane where it picks up something and drops it. You know, I've talked about this before. God bless you. I've dropped it, you know, talked about it before. I fully expect the amount of our games to eclipse the home market as soon as we can build them. I have a movie theater operator. He wants 100 games tomorrow. He's not buying other things that are out there. He's waiting for my game. You know, he put it in his budget for 2014 that he wants to buy those games. So, you know, the how I felt a year ago was great. We didn't even have a game, right? We weren't shipping games. And I had this conversation with a couple of you earlier where I said, you know, ship 500 games, you should be jumping, doing cartwheels and all that stuff and everything. And I did my cartwheel, right? So I'll be happier when those green games, they're done. And we can move on to do regular Wizard of Oz games. And people that will have games in a box, and you want a game, here's your game, give me your money, you know, and that'll be it. But operators don't care that it's Wizard of Oz. They only care what's in the bill acceptor or the cash box. They could care less about that game, okay, because I'm an operator. I could care less about the game. I bought it. It's something that's going to make me money, and we want to build games that make operators money. At the same time, we want to build a game that's deep for a great player. It's not frustrating for a casual player. Somebody can walk up to the game, and they play the game, and they can understand how to play the game. Because you have this video screen, and you're being prompted not just in voice, but you're being prompted on the screen because of JP, all of what he did, and everybody else. You know, even when the game, go start a game and don't shoot the ball. Just go to one of the games out there and start the game and don't shoot the ball. What happens? A screen comes up and it shows you the plunger. Go like that. You could figure that out. So that's why they're making more money on location. People see the game, they say, holy cow, look at this thing. I got to put money into it. And they put money in, and they put money in, they put money in. So as long as it works, I've said this before too, my two ingredients for a great game. It's got to work, and it's got to be fun. Okay? So if it doesn't work, you're out of business. If it works and it's not fun, you're not making any money. So those two little ingredients that make great games, that's what it is. And I think, you know, I know we said we're building the greatest pinball machine in the world. We have to believe that. Because if we believe we were building a piece of crap, we'd build a piece of crap. Okay? So we have to believe we were building the greatest pinball machine in the world. And that's what we want to believe we built. The Hobbit team, some of them are the same people from Wizard of Oz, their goal right now is to say Wizard of Oz is the worst game we ever built. Okay, you got that? That's how they're motivated. And that's a scary thing, you know, for me in some ways. I understand. Hey, Jim, how are you? Good, you're looking good. So, you know, that's what the story is. And I think, again, hi. What do I got, a Calic?
Yeah.
Sorry, listen, I'm not perfect.
It'll
that's
save
for sure.
Me in Photoshop. But
okay, all right. Killing me. Just don't take pictures of me sneezing and all that stuff, you know? Okay, good. I forgot what I was saying because Jim distracted me, but I think you got the answer. That time you might have gotten a real answer.
Question, sir, directed to who?
Keith Johnson.
Johnny Norman.
Yeah. Keith, you programmed the game. We got different levels of players. You have different levels of just the game for beginner, intermediate, and expert.
What was the last part one more time?
Yeah, beginners, say you got a young child wants to play pinball.
Yeah.
But you don't want to be on hard, or there are different levels you can set the game to.
Yeah, some things have difficulty settings right now. Not all of them are implemented yet, but there'll be full settings for every rule in the game as to how easy or hard it can be. So, yeah, anyone should be able to walk up to it and, you know, get real.
That's the factory coming out.
Factory is factory. Factory is normal. Factory is what, you know, the ideal mix of how hard the game is versus what, you know, the satisfaction it gives people on location for it to earn money, you know. So I mean, it's probably a little bit hard, you know, but it gives you enough that is interesting and keeps you coming back, wanting to try further.
Oh, way in the back, yes, sir. And who are you directing it to, please? Keith, the man of the hour.
What was that about internet connectivity?
Any updates on the use of that in Wizard of Oz or
We have ideas of what we want to do. There's no connectivity yet in the game, but it'll probably be coming relatively soon. It'll start off with simpler things like the game being able to email you that something's broken or something, you know, reminding you it's time to service it or something like that. But, you know, we have plans later on for what we're going to do with it. You know, we don't want to reveal everything just now. But whatever we do, it will be, you know, basically backported to all of the games that exist. So, you know, if we come out with some cool idea, you know, on The Hobbit, it'll go into Wizard of Oz and get released, you know, that way at some point. And if we don't get to it on Hobbit, it comes out on, you know, game number 3 or whatever, you know, same thing. But both The Hobbit and The Wizard of Oz will get it. You know, we're designing our system so that it's easy to get, you know, all of our later features, you know, and all versions of and all our older games. You know, that's our plan.
Any other questions? Yes, sir, and who are you directing it to, please? Keith and Eric, please.
First off, is the software upgrade going to be a full install or just a simple upgrade?
Oh, the next one? 122 is just a regular USB update, yeah.
And I would like to thank you, Lloyd, and you first for designing the new boards, and you, Lloyd, for always rushing to me when I say I have problems with
it. Thank you, sir. Jack, do we have the magnets?
Sure.
Ooh, trivia contest time. You can win your rare Jersey Jack magnet.
All right.
Okay. What was Toto's real name?
It wasn't Lloyd. Hurry up, Google search that. Who can get that first?
No, Toto wasn't the dog's real name. Toto was the stage name, the movie name. Okay, let's... Hey, these are good magnets, people. Okay, we'll try an easier trivia question. Spooky Pinball Podcast was the one that leaked that Jersey Jack was going to do the Wizard of Oz pinball, and that recording went live on what date?
January 1st.
Yes, we have a winner. Would you come up here, please? Any other questions for the Jersey Jack pinball team? Well, we got more trivia, but I thought we're going to run out of magnets here. I'm going to run out of questions.
Okay.
When was The Hobbit officially announced on Pinball News? Oh, Martin. Oh, wait, Martin's ineligible on this one. Sorry. How can we make easier questions?
I don't know. I don't even know when that is.
I'll give you a hint. It starts with an 11.
11:27. November 27? November 28. November 29.
Well, I want a magnet. 11/30/2012. Okay, in The Hobbit, who plays...
Terry.
Pardon?
Terry.
There you go. He Google searched it. Terry is the dog's name.
Yay! We have a winner.
Oh, he's answering a question from a half hour ago.
Congratulations. Okay, since everybody wants all the little inside tidbits and information on The Hobbit, who plays Bilbo Biggins in the new Hobbit movies?
Bilbo Biggins.
Baggins.
We can't talk about that.
Boggins.
It's
that Midwest accent.
Yeah.
Okay, I didn't like the movie. I'm sorry.
Who plays it?
Martin Freeman.
Oh, we have a winner. Martin Freeman.
Is that the guy that wants like $100,000 to do the voice?
Yeah. And who plays Gandalf? Yes, sir.
Yay. Yeah. Sir to you.
Congratulations.
Well, I ran out of questions.
Really? Okay. That's good.
Sorry, I didn't have a lot of time to work on this.
That's good.
And we have more questions for the Jersey Jack team. This is your chance. Beat them up. Hard questions. Yes, sir.
This is probably a question for Joe. Given that
Warner is very tight with material engineering, and obviously you're not going to get stuff for, you know, for the upcoming movies until very close to release. How difficult will it be for you to manage getting that and still making the contractual deadline of having to deliver the machine by a particular, by the release date of the third book?
Good question. You have to kind of draw a line between what the mechanisms are and how the game shoots, and then how it's implemented into the title that you're trying to get to. So, I mean, we knew we're going to do The Hobbit, so we had a list of features that we wanted to see on the game, and then I'll lay that out and try to put as many of those features in a pinball-related layout. So my job is to make sure that the shots work, the mechanisms are in the right place, they're being used the right way. And if there's testing that needs to be done, that we have ample testing done on the new mechanisms, if there are new mechanisms. So there is a fine line between, do we make this game? You know, you can't tell how the game is going to look until the art, well, all the artwork is put in, but you can tell the way the game plays before the art and the music and the light shows and everything else come up. The one thing about when you build that Whitewood, you know when you have a good playing game, when you have fun shooting a Whitewood with no rules, no, you know, nothing there but shots and, you know, flow and how the balls move in and everything else. So if you get something you're comfortable with there, tying it together with all the graphics and the sounds and light shows and everything else is a lot easier. So we're real comfortable with what we have right now, and it's a matter, like, you know, it's a matter of building it up completely as the Whitewood and make sure that shots are tweaked, they're right, they're in the right spot, and then just go from there. We kind of knew it, like when we built the Whitewood on Oz, once we got the Whitewood shooting, you just felt good to shoot that. You knew it was going to be a good shooting game. There was a lot of stuff going on, and it all, you know, it all worked hand in hand with the plan of all these shots and all these mechanisms meaning something, you know, with the final artwork package and sound and everything else. So it kind of flows together up to a point. And then you got to just kind of cut it off and say, let's make this work, while the artists and the graphic guys and the sound guys and Keith coding the game are doing their thing. We're just making sure it's mechanically right. So I hope that answers your question.
Yes, sir.
Question for Jack. We want the company and we want you to be around for a long time. In order to do that,
Not yet. We will be, you know. Remember, a startup is going to lose money. You built something. It's like the other day was Columbus Day, so Columbus got in a boat and he went somewhere. He didn't know where the hell he was going. He went with borrowed money and, you know, he got where he got. And, you know, the rest is history, I guess. So, you know, I think in the second game, you know, there's a lot that's learned from the first game, and I think the third game there's a lot that gets learned from the first two. So, you know, we're here. You know, the company started completely backwards. You know, it got funded. Yeah, I put money in, and you know, but you know, all of you guys put money in, and we started the company. So, you know, to get it to keep going and everything like that. You know, we're still owed a good amount of money on a lot of games that are still out there committed. So, you know, as long as we're building something that people want and we're priced right, we'll be fine. You know, I think some of our prices actually did go up because the market made it go up. But nothing really goes down much. You know, it's law of nature. It just seems the only thing going down is rain. So the price on everything keeps going up. And I don't want to really you know, we're not really trying to take a lot of things out of the game. We're trying to give you a very robust experience as a player and as an operator. So it's an expensive game. You know, it's probably for the Wizard of Oz, you know, just doing this 38 years, looking at the game and not knowing anything about it for a minute, if I could just do that. I don't think anybody thought that we'd make a game like that, because it's just too much of everything. It's just too much of everything in that game. It's insanity. And, you know, then to match that or beat that with The Hobbit in different ways, you know, it's a challenge. And, you know, we can go out there and play great games that have almost nothing on them, and they're fun to play. You know, but I felt, and we all felt, that the first game from a new company had to be something to, you know, put the tent pole of the company in, and that was going to be the greatest thing, you know, that you had to start with. You couldn't start with something that was just okay. You had to start with something that was really great. That's what we tried to do.
Hey, Cat, are you going to use different suppliers than what you use for the Wizard of Oz?
Different suppliers than what we use for the Wizard of Oz. We have good relationships with most of our vendors. You know, I don't really know that we're going to use different suppliers. It took us a year or two to teach some of them to do what they're doing right now for us. So, you know, we can't go to Hector's Hardware Store and buy everything that goes in this game, because a lot of things that go in the game are obviously custom to us and they're married to a certain vendor. You know, do we beat up different vendors about different things? Yeah, Jim does a great job at that. And, you know, if certain vendors, they come and go too. So you can't get a supply of one thing from somebody. You might use two or three different people to do, you know, complementary things in the game. You know, it's, again, it's an evolution of it. You know.
Yes, sir. Sorry. No.
Question for Jack. You just mentioned, you know, there obviously are great games that are relatively simple mechanically. I understand, you know, the need to do the Gee Whiz game for Wizard or Hobbit, but are there thoughts, you know, maybe the fifth or sixth game down, you do a game that's simpler and therefore lower price?
There's a thought of that, and, you know, we're working on that too. So, you know, the part of us that says simpler is better is sometimes possible. But, you know, I think when I was a kid, maybe under the Christmas tree, I might have played with an empty cardboard box, you know, and it was okay. And what's happened to us generationally is that everybody's overstimulated and everybody is, you know, on TV, if you watch a movie or you watch this show that we're doing or something like that, your attention span's about 4.5 seconds. That's why in movies and TV, they change a scene, they change a scene, they change a scene, they change a color. Right, JP? They do all that stuff, right? You can't go back. I used to get people come to my building and they want to buy like Spirit of 76. Great game. Take that for example. Dad played it when he was in high school. He brings a little junior and dad shoots the ball and his son walks away before the ball even gets to the flippers. It doesn't interest them. It interests all of you because you're all pinheads. We all love pinball. We can't go out there and find any game that we hate. There's something even about Popeye that we might like. I like the theme song. You know, and I'm not picking on Popeye, but, you know, there's great games and there's crappy games. But it's all pinball, so it's all good. There's nothing wrong with that. So, right? So, you know, could you have a commercial game again that makes money on location that's a simple game? Maybe. You know, what you talked about before with the internet, it's really not a secret. I have a pending patent right now that was published in May about all kinds of stuff we're going to do with pinball. Google, you know, pinball redemption system or whatever. It's up there. It's got to be published for the public. But, you know, I worked on that years ago. And, you know, some of that will get implemented possibly sooner or later. Could you make pinball into a true prize redemption game with internet connectivity and social networking and all of that kind of stuff? I don't know. Maybe you can't. So I don't know. You know, you got to go into those things and find out. Could you really make a simple game and have it make money? honestly, today in today's market? I don't think so. I'll give you one other example, okay? Big arcade in New Jersey that has a lot of games, 300 games. I Play America. There's a Wizard of Oz pinball machine in there. And it does about $500 a week. But, like, the big bass wheel in a place like that will do $2,000 a week or $3,000 a week. So, you know, again, an operator is going to say, well, I want to buy this. So in those arcades, when you go there, you see four bass wheels if you go to Dave and Buster's. Because it's real easy. The guy that buys the equipment says, well, I don't know, give me four of them. I don't know what to buy. That takes up that wall. Great. And they all make money because it's a simple, stupid game. And you're going to win tickets on it or whatever, and you're going to go redeem $30 worth of tickets for a 2-cent prize. And you're going to feel happy that you got something. Pinball in that environment, it's difficult for it to compete. It competes because it has people coming to it that like to play pinball. Dad has nothing to do. He's waiting for little Johnny at the party, and he'll go play pinball. So it's casual entertainment. It's casual amusement. That's what our games were years ago. They weren't this thing to reward you with an iPad, you know, for putting $5 in there, and you got to put $10,000 in the game before you get a $400 iPad. So simple games, it's a tough formula. You know, it's possible, again, maybe. We're thinking about it. We have some talk about making a simpler game that's less expensive, less bill of materials, less money, and that would be a game that we have to build, you know, maybe 10 of them, put them out on location, see what they are, see if they're fun, see if they work, see if they make money. It's a process. Long answer, sorry.
Yes, sir.
You touched on...
excuse me 1 second. Question for who? Jack.
You touched on the fact that people are... things short, people are playing...
What'd you say?
You were just touching on...
No. That's for Paul.
And so I just wanted to ask, what's your opinion on new players and how do you attract new players to pinball?
Well, again, hopefully we're attracting new players to pinball with our game. We see it on location. You know, we see people. We were at the Wizard of Oz party. So here's a pretty quick, great example. We were on a rooftop party at Madame Tussauds with the 275th anniversary games. And two girls walked up to the game, and they didn't know how to play the game. And they saw a blinking light on the front, and they pushed the button. And then the ball came out, and the witch laughed, and they laughed. And then Jen walked over to them and said, here, look, pull the plunger. And they were hitting the flippers with both hands. And she said, look, no, here's what you do. Here's the right, here's the left. And what happened? Both girls, one girl was working the right flipper, and one girl was working the left flipper. And then they evolved. In a few minutes, one was playing one game and one was playing another game, and they weren't going like that. They were actually going like that. Two more people now play pinball because they saw that game. They were taught. They never saw a pinball machine before. And I think the mom wanted to buy a game on the spot. We told her she wanted to buy that game, actually. She said, could you deliver this game to my house? I got plenty of money. We can't, you know, you have a fight. I'll give you $8,000, $10,000. No, I can't do it. So, yeah, that's what attracts them is something new, something that they haven't seen before. They have to have that wow moment.
Yeah, just to expand what you're talking about, I personally observed a lot of positive experiences. I play a lot of Wizard of Oz, either at Julie's Arcade, Ocean's Boardwalk, or Silver Ball Museum at Asbury Park. And I see both men and women and all ages, from 5 years old to 75, stopping their tracks and to look at the game. And as they're watching me play, I actually start to explain the game to them. And then they play, and then I tell them, like, little things. After a while, say this, excuse me, of working for Jersey Jack Pinball. I don't work for the company, I'm just kidding. But I don't work for the company, but they think I do because they're not used to somebody explaining something positive to them. But I just want to expand on what you said. A lot of people really like the game. And personally, my 5-year-old and 6-year-old nephew love the game, and I even have a 3-year-old niece who loves the game as well. So all
ages. That's good.
It's good there.
I like to hear that. I always like to hear that. Who's Jersey Jack Pinball distributor? Anybody in the room? Who's the distributor? Stand up. Where's that other guy, Jesse?
You can go back over there.
Oh, good. Okay, good.
We kicked him out.
Bert, Ministry of Pinball. Jersey Jack Pinball's sexiest distributor, right? I've seen those ads on billboards in Manhattan. And Joe from Pinball Star. And there's, oh, that's not Jesse, but you got the guys from Pincades. Yeah, so that's good. Well, they got some games. They're waiting for more games. We'll get them.
That's it. Any more questions? Yes, sir.
Took how many subways are going to be on the Hobbit?
Oh, good one, Joe.
Ooh, who are you directing
how
this
many
question
subways
to
on the Hobbit, Joe?
Brent? Oh, Jack.
Oh, geez. This was the kid I couldn't lie to last year, right? Was this the same kid that I couldn't? He asked me what was in the crystal ball. Didn't you ask me what was in the crystal ball? And I said to you what? I couldn't lie to you. And what did I say? I said it was going to be a light show, right? Well, I didn't lie. I just didn't tell you the lights were configured in the LCD, miniature LCD. You know, I don't want to lie. Even though I'm touching my nose, that's a tell. So purposely, you know, people say, oh, my God, he touched his nose. He's lying. Tell a lie. I don't know. How many subways are there? A train, B train, C train, D train.
There's splits into two.
Yeah.
So that could be three.
Yeah, it's at least one, two, three. All of the above, you know. There's a lot going on underneath there because there's a lot that goes on underground in the Hobbit, right? So we got to go, right? We got to go underground, right? We don't go up. We go. Well, you go up, Smaug has a nice mountain, right? And you got Lakewood, right? I know it's Lake Town. I know it's Lake Town. It's not Lakewood where we build the games. It's Lake Town. So.
Any other questions? Yes, sir. Directed to who, please?
Anybody.
Ooh.
Anybody. What is the name of Professor Marvel's horse?
Sylvester.
This is your chance to win a magnet, guys.
What's the prize?
Sylvester. Is that right?
Keith got it. All right, Dan. What do you get for Keith? You get him a pass.
Give him a
there you go. You get
a
pass, and next time you're at league, you get to get a turn at it. There you go.
Jim.
This is for Jack and Keith. You guys said that you created this game to go after all the markets. Has the settings changed to make it easier for different markets and opponents? Does the left, like ball train game, change that behavior?
What about the neighbor? You're going to have neighbor.
And if not, that might be a good thing.
You didn't do that yet. No. Did you do neighbor?
Yeah, I mean. Yeah, I admit There's No Place Like Home is really hard right now. It was one of those things that we wanted to get in the game, and you know, it'll get easier. There'll be a couple ways it can get easier. One is right now, for example, the ball targets and the rescue targets have the ability where, and this is on by default, where if you hit a target that's already been hit, then they can spot a neighbor target. You know, so that'll go in the There's No Place Like Home mode. And, you know, the ultimate easy one is that you hit any target and it'll light any target. You know, so there's definitely ways, you know, we can get it easier. And it will get easier, for sure. Yeah, I mean, I have gotten the complaint, you know, that the game, that mode is kind of in reverse difficulty, which I don't disagree with that assessment. But you absolutely have to have somewhere over the rainbow first, because otherwise no one's going to hear it. So, and, you know, the rainbow has to use the rainbow targets. At least it does to me. So, yeah, it's... you know, at least you get to hear somewhere over the rainbow, but yeah, right now it's a little bit hard compared to what it should be. So it'll get tweaked out and it'll get better. Don't worry.
Any more questions? Yes, sir. Oh, sorry.
Whoever designs the light show, who's that?
Who designs the light show?
Well, it's a combination, you know. There are there are a couple ways we do light shows. One of them is, normal, just turn on this lamp to be this color. And then there are other ways that we, you set up strings of lamps and turn things different colors and that kind of thing. And then now we have the ability for JP to kind of like animate some lights for us, and we do some stuff that way as well. So there's there's several different techniques. It just depends on context and what makes sense at the time, and whether it's a full play field effect or whether it's a quick thing that needs to happen, like you hit a target and the lights explode out from it or whatever. So the answer is, I guess there's three of us right now that design light shows: me, Ted, and JP.
Well, I just meant that question to identify to ask my questions. My real question is, you design a play field layout with drawings and stuff, and then you try it. How do you design a light show? Is it trial and error, or do you do stuff on like paper first?
It's an art. It's not a science, So it's one of those things. After you do it for a while, you get kind of a better feel for it and what would look good and that kind of thing, And you always have the standard kind of things, like you always want to have your left to right or right to left or up and down or whatever. So there's no set answer. I mean, in the old days, you'd be very limited. I just want to have my lamps, highlight a certain area, or I want them to sweep up and down or whatever, or blink everything, alternately. We're like beyond orders of magnitude, from what we used to do, since every light can be one of zillions of colors. So it's been fun and interesting trying to come up with new ideas, see what looks good. I mean, it's kind of a work in progress. We'll do one thing and, we'll see how it looks and see how we feel about it, and either it'll stay in the game or maybe gets changed later on or something. But, there's no real set answer as to how to do it. It's, you try something and does it look good? And if it does, great. If not, well, try something else.
Yes, sir. You had a question?
It's not a bad idea. It's, the problem is you're staring at the ball with all your might. You're like, it goes down the lane. You're like watching it bounce. Like, oh, that's kind of cool. What's it doing? I don't know. You're still not looking at the screen when it happens.
When you look up and said ball save, and you need to keep that explorable
thing in the corner of the side. Yeah, it's not a bad idea. It'll probably be something we play around with.
Any more questions? Yes, sir.
How many games in terms of what? That's a good question. Right now we're so leaps and bounds in front of everything else, it's hard to imagine that the ability to require that we need to do something, much beyond what we're already doing. I mean, we've got the screen and we've got the RGBs, and we're kind of just scratching the surface, so there's a lot of room to grow and to evolve and that kind of thing, just based on what we have. I mean, technology will change, and maybe some things come later on and we try some other stuff or whatever. But right now, I mean that for White Star, for example, there had to have been like 20 games under White Star, and Stern's probably up to 15, 20 games on Sam already. I mean, I could see it going for a long time. I don't really know what we would change right now. I mean, we already will be in a situation where, we'll get improvements kind of, quote unquote, for free, because motherboards will go obsolete or whatever, and we'll move on to a new generation of motherboard, and, you know, things will get faster, and maybe that affords us the ability to, you know, put more pixels on the screen or whatever. I mean, we're not taxing out, we're not maxing out our CPU right now, so, you know, we still have room to do anything else that we want to do at the moment. So, right now, there's, the sky's the limit.
Yes, sir, and who for? Anyone.
Does the company have any locks in the future?
Ooh. What is it? Does the company have any locks on any future licenses right now?
Yeah, The Hobbit is a future license. No, I want to still do a couple of games that don't have a license. So I still have that in mind. You know, and we're going to work on those games too. So I still think once you develop a platform and then you can have a really good game, maybe it doesn't need a license, but it goes back to the question before about something simpler and everything like that. So we'll see. We're working on possibly acquiring some other licenses too. But, you know, we're not developing 4 or 5 games at one time. So if we go out and grab a license and pay for something, it's going to have to be, you know, a couple of years from now. So, never know.
Any other questions? Yes, sir. And who for? Keith.
Yeah, there's already a couple in there. I mean, you know, a lot of people, you know, have already seen and talked about the cow that's in there already. You know, there'll be a few more surprises in there, I think.
Yes, sir.
For you. Based on what you've seen on tech support questions and stuff on Windows Auto, how would you compare that to, like, Valley Williams games or your games in terms of difficulty and stuff like that?
You know, I don't really want to comment on Stern for the fact that I don't have any of the really current ones. You know, if we go back on Stern, say, to Spider-Man, Batman era, out of the box, we're better than Williams. No ifs, ands, or buts about it. I never had a Williams pin. I never had any pin in that era. They didn't have 3-4 days of tweaking. What I've seen on tech support, and bear in mind, tech support is all over the map. You know, back in the day, like when we'd be buying a new Williams game, a new Williams pin, Bally pin, this is predominantly operators. We've got out there right now people that have never seen a pinball machine. I mean, I had a couple stop into my business last year to see a Wizard of Oz. They're big, huge Wizard of Oz fans. They bought one because it's Wizard of Oz. They didn't know what pinball was. They stopped in to see it. So we're all over the map. There are people that have bought these that are smarter than me. They're operators. They're collectors. There's people that have never had them. Jack's got Williams beat. You know, hands down, in at least as far as my experience with Stern, he's probably got them beat too. You know, out of the box, I mean, that's just what we got, 500 or 600 games running around out there. And an awful lot of, I'm probably on tech support 500 or 600 minutes a week on the phone, but a lot of this is like I spent 37 and a half minutes convincing a person you can't have 10 balls in a 5-ball game. I had another person that cut a circuit board in half with a wire cutter. I was like, I didn't even want to ask what, you know, you've got an $8,000 game and what in the hell are you thinking? But, you know, the actual physical problems are you know, because they're all coming through me, are tiny. And also something, too, when I was a test operator for 19 years, when I got a game, that's it. They're going to production. They didn't give a royal crap what happened or not. This is the way it's going. Jack is continually upgrading. He cares. You know, he's got some of the best engineers and people in the industry helping people if they do have a problem so that they can enjoy their game. I mean, he's really setting the pace for it, and it's not to be the best. He just wants to do the best for his customers. Any other questions? Well, I ran out of trivia questions. Yes, sir.
You got any money?
Okay.
You know, that's what it takes. It takes more money. You know, if we had a lot more money, you know, in honest terms, if we had a lot more money, we could apply it to a lot more parts. We could build a lot more games a lot sooner. More. See me afterwards. You know, Apple is in the dumper. Forget about it. If Apple was $1,000 a share, maybe we got a shot. You know, but it's a thing where online could probably build about 20 games a day right now, or a little bit more, because your rent is the same, a lot of your fixed costs are the same, right? So people could work a couple hours extra a day. You could work Saturday, you know, things like that. Some of our vendors are really great. Some of our vendors are not really great, and they don't come through with what they have to. Even if I pay them in advance, they don't. If I owe them money, they don't. If we threaten them, they don't. Whatever. They worked summertime. They were so busy, some of them worked 3 days a week because they were so busy, you know. And they had big POs from us, and they were out on their boat fishing somewhere, you know, when we were working in our building. Good luck in this country building anything. You know, and, you know, if Gary Stern stands here, he's going to tell you the same thing, because it's the absolute truth. The whole freaking government was closed, what, 16 days? They should have just stayed off the rest of the year. You know, it's sad state of affairs in our country today with a lot of these different things. And going to do anything is difficult. So what was your question? No, I'm only kidding. But yeah, that's, you know, if I had one word to say what it would be, it'd probably be money. You know, just all my friends, I have friends that are billionaires. I have friends that have multi-million dollar companies. They own millions of dollars of stock in their own companies that are publicly traded. And you know what they say to me? You do an amazing thing. I don't know how you did it. You know, just keep doing what you're doing, and it's going to be great. But, you know, you got to make hay when the sun shines, you know. Eventually, Stern's going to make a game that, you know, is better and better and better, you know. And I want them to be in business. I want them to build 1 million games a year so that we build 2 million games a year. I don't want them to go anywhere. You know, I like them. I like what they're doing. And I like what we're doing. I hope there's 3 or 4 more guys, those knuckleheads out there building pinball machines. You know, you got John Papaduke, not that he's a knucklehead. You got this guy, that guy, the other guy, the Matrix, all of these different things. They're great. You know, if they could find their way out into the wild, and, you know, I think some of what we did, we made it look really easy. It wasn't easy. I told you before. This was the hardest thing I'd ever did in my life. I hope after these games, you know, the green games go, I start to get my life back. Everybody that got a game is like, check, another one. You know, so... It's not, you know, entrepreneurial thinker. You leap off a building and the net is there, but it's what you make it, you know. So it's not easy. It's not easy. And look, you know, anything could fail. You know, Lehman Brothers closed up. You know, General Motors went bankrupt. All kinds of things happen. If you're going to think you're going to fail, you're going to fail. I said that many times. Failure was never an option with this thing. We were going to build a game. We were going to make a game. It was going to happen. We had people saying all kinds of shit. Never going to make it. They're designing it. They'll never build it. They'll never get delivered. It'll never work. It'll never make money. They'll never do it. I don't know. Some of those people would be very happy if I probably dropped dead tonight. So I'm not going to make them happy.
Thank you, Jack. That's about a wrap for a closing argument.
That's a wrap. Thank you, everybody. Go play some pinball.